Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, June 28th, 2024. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us for the Friday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart today. Well, a triathlon for both pro and amateur athletes alike is coming to Chicago. We'll learn about that in our next segment, but right now, a measure on inflation closely watched by the Fed is out. We just heard from Bloomberg, but let's find out what it signals with Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute based in St. Louis. Paul, glad to have you with us. We just heard Ann from Bloomberg mention some of these numbers. I want to hear, first of all, let's break down the big numbers here that we need to pay attention to from the PCE.
Yeah, hi, Rachel. So a couple of big themes come out of these numbers. First of all, the consumer's staying power still seems to be holding up. Personal income came in better than expected for the month of May. And then we're starting to see the inflation rate cool more broadly. We saw a better number, lower number in inflation from the consumer price index earlier this month. And now the Fed's favorite measure, personal consumption expenditures, that price deflator up 2.6%. Still a little bit elevated for the Fed, but moving in the right direction. It signals for the markets that rate cuts may be not that far away, maybe September.
And that sort of leads into my next question. And how does this play into the Fed policy going forward? Are we expecting those, you said, September-ish, where we can maybe see some more cuts coming?
Yeah, certainly in the fourth quarter, but maybe September. We still think you'll get two cuts this year, perhaps one in September and then perhaps one near the end of the year.
No, but here's the thing. We see some encouraging numbers here on the inflation front, but does that translate to people's wallets? I think that's what a lot of people care about is you can say inflation's going down, but if I'm still spending way more than I used to on groceries, I'm not really feeling it.
Well, right. I mean, it has to do with the difference between levels and rates of change. So if the price of eggs is $6 a carton, let's say for a dozen today, and it was only $2 in 2019, people will definitely notice that and they'll register that in their votes this coming November. But for the Fed, what's important is that the rate of change in prices must come down until it's closer to 2%. And then you hope that wages rise enough so that those eggs become more affordable in the longer run.
Not just eggs. I mean, home prices, too. They're still pretty high nationally. So do you forecast any relief there for future home buyers?
Well, the economy doesn't just slow to a stop and then turn on a dime. What will happen is that there are sectors of the economy. I mean, consumers, the income was a good report today. But look at housing prices. My goodness, a median home price in the U.S., almost $410,000. That's a record. Manufacturing still suffering in some places. The lower income consumers getting no real relief. Their wages are not keeping up. So there's segments of the economy that will continue to slow. Then the Fed will cut rates finally. Credit gets easier and cheaper. And then we get a little bit of a rebound. And the markets will really like that, we think.
Well, but as you mentioned, that's not a snap of the finger here. This is something that's going to take a little bit of time.
Yes, that's right. It doesn't happen on a dime. What we're looking for is something that not a V-shaped recovery in the economy or trajectory, but more like a saucer, a teacup saucer or a coffee cup saucer, where we're going to continue to slow for a little while longer. The Fed starts cutting rates. Inflation has come down. And then we see credit get more available. Then people begin to spend more. And you get the other side of that saucer where we get a little bit of a rebound. And that's probably late this year and into 25.
And Paul, does that sort of optimism translate into the overall economy? We're ending on a pretty strong note here for the first half of the year. Is that going to perpetuate into next half?
Yeah, you'll still have these weak spots in the economy. It's a little bit like getting sick. Everything doesn't get better all at once. You might feel like getting up and around, but the legs still hurt from lying in bed for so long. So housing is going to take a little while, probably. The low-income consumers probably will take a little while for their incomes to catch up just the price increases we've seen already, as we discussed a minute ago. So that's going to take a little while, and that's why we don't look for that strong recovery, more like the other side of the teacup saucer, where we come out of it more gradually. And things get better, we think, in 2025 and into 26.
Paul, always appreciate the helpful metaphors. That's Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Coming up, a triathlon that's geared to a field ranging from kids to grandparents.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A triathlon coming to Chicago this August is aimed at a wide range of athletes. So let's get the scoop from Michael Dolst, co-founder and CEO of Super Tri Chicago. He's joining us from London, England. And Michael, we're glad to have you with us. Chicago has been home to a triathlon for decades, but there's something new coming this summer.
Hi, Rachel. Yes, indeed, something new is coming. We're bringing out on top of the triathlon that has been around for two decades plus. We're bringing also some professional athletes in town, basically the whole U.S. Olympic team who will be gunning for gold in Paris this summer will come to town in late August to Chicago. So we're adding some flavor to the existing triathlon.
Yeah, I think that's going to be fun for spectators, too, to see that professional component. From what I understand, too, is you're sort of catering to the other end of things and offering some amateur sporting event.
Yeah. Actually, the triathlon in Chicago is the biggest in North America. So it's a triathlon that is already very, very successful. And it's 2 days of racing, one day at Foster Beach. And at the Foster Beach on Saturday is all about kids, a short course triathlon. We also have a divvy wave where you basically ride a divvy bike. So that's very, very accessible. And then Sunday we move to Queen's Landing to Monroe Harbor, where we swim, we cycle on lakeshore drive through a very safe and wide open roads and run across the lake. So, but also very accessible to all levels of triathlon.
Yeah, what's sort of the reasoning? Is there a passion behind wanting to get sort of first timers involved alongside seasoned veterans? I do think that when you mention a triathlon, it sounds pretty daunting to those of us who maybe aren't the most athletic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic sport because it combines swimming, biking, and running. And we also have team relays, so you can do it together with friends where one person swims, one person bikes, one person runs. So it really caters for everybody. But for me, it's really the passion of bringing a community together, bring them doing something, doing a great sport, doing three great sports, actually, and competing amongst a group of passionate people who love sports, who enjoy a day out, and it's all about swimming, biking, and running together.
Now, Michael, Chicago's not the only stop here for the Super Tri, correct?
No, that is correct. We start actually in Boston the weekend before, so there's the Olympics late July, and then the athletes come to Boston. We travel to we come to Chicago, and after Chicago, we move to London, and we go to a smaller city in France called Toulouse. So there's multiple stops for a very exciting circuit.
And the Chicago component, the dates for that, it's in August, but give us the dates there.
Yeah, 24th to 25th of August. So it's the traditional weekend of the Chicago Triathlon. It's been there for over two decades. So it's been a great event. And as I said, Saturday at Foster Beach, Sunday at Monroe Harbor, and there's going to be over 8,000 people participating. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for the preview, Michael Dolst, co-founder and CEO of Super Tri Chicago. Up next, we'll take a close look at what's driving a demand for denim.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, Beyonce and a craze in Western clothing is driving up sales of denim. Let's check in with Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. And Bob, it's not just me, because I felt like I was looking around and starting to see just a lot of people dressed in Western wear. And it turns out that I'm not insane.
Yeehaw!
Okay, what is going on and what is driving this trend?
Well, of course, everybody would love to say it was Beyonce had that hit. And let's, I actually started Western wear back in the 80s, before you were even born. And the popular appeal of music cannot be dismissed. It really does make a difference. And particularly for Beyonce to have Levi Strauss in the name help. But I think one of the things that really I thought was interesting, how Levi's sales of their denim skirts or jumpsuits and dresses have all doubled in the last quarter. I mean, that's significant for a worldwide brand.
Yeah, that's not nothing. And maybe this is giving some, if I'm another fashion brand, I'm taking notice of this and I'm going to start finding a popular artist and convincing them to mention my clothes in their next hit.
Well, I'm not that, so nice try.
Well, they can pay me for my marketing strategy later. It's fine. I'll take credit later. But what I am curious about is also, like, I live out in the western suburbs of Chicago, and there are a bunch of malls. And it's just in the past couple of years, I've started to see actual retail stores pop up that are exclusively western wear.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because it's one of the few trends that can come and go upscale. It can go downscale. Any designer can get into it and get out of it quick. What this trend seems to be a little different is a young woman in particular is not looking just to buy the gaucho denim. It's head-to-toe denim, which is why Levi's great. And let's take a look. You know, we saw that Abercrombie has had this amazing year, and even Gap is doing great. Everyone's like, oh, it must be Gap has turned a corner. Have they? Or are they just in the right trend at the right time?
Yeah, I don't know. Some of this we know can just be attributed to dumb luck, right? Because you never know. There's plenty of things mentioned in lots of songs, and it doesn't mean people go flocking to the stores to get it.
Unless you're Jimmy Buffett, then maybe Margaritaville.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Right.
You know, but yeah, absolutely. And we're going to see it for a while because it's a casual trend. It usually comes in summer. It'll probably live at least through fall. But what it is, it's also seen as a uniquely American way of dressing. So wherever you are in the world, particularly with Levi's brand on it, you know, they're popular again. And how exciting is that? I mean, it's about being comfortable and casual and yeehaw.
The pillars of my wardrobe. Thanks so much for joining us, Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor based in New York. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, making a go in the ultra-competitive pizza space here in Chicago.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling could impact defendants charged in the assault on the U.S. Capitol in 2021. Layoffs are being announced at Chicago Public Schools. In Entrepreneur Friday, we'll meet the man behind a nationally ranked pizza restaurant in the Streeterville neighborhood. Plus, AI, it's behind a new robot for kids. WBBM Business. Markets in the red. The Dow down 19 points. NASDAQ off 16. The S&P 500 down just about 2 points now. AccuWeather says we'll see rain showers on and off for much of the afternoon as temperatures reach a high in the mid-70s. It'll cool down to around 71 tonight. It's 12:31. The Noon Business Hour continues as the Supreme Court has ruled a federal obstruction law could not be used to prosecute a man charged in the 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. CBS News legal correspondent Jan Crawford has more.
So the question now is, because the court is narrowing prosecutors' use of this statute, in what cases could it be applied? I think it's very important to point out that even with this decision, this does not mean that prosecutors can't charge all these January 6th defendants with obstruction of an official proceeding. It has to be tied to some kind of destruction or tampering with evidence or documents.
Now, the same charge has also been brought against former President Donald Trump. Here in Chicago, the Chicago Public School System is laying off nearly 600 support staff members, about half of them teacher aides. CPS maintains most of them, though, will find jobs in other schools. The Sun-Times reports school leaders indicate the moves are individual decisions made by school principals. CPS CEO Pedro Martinez says spending on schools overall will either stay the same or go up in the next academic year.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, stocks are trading mixed right now. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley Financial in New York. And Art, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, I tell you, it's important to remember that we're at the end of a month and an end of a quarter. So that has its own sort of iterations in terms of rebalancing for folks that run portfolios that need to rebalance quarterly. So if, in fact, that's the case, then you would necessarily see a little bit of pressure on equities and a little bit of a bid for bonds. We're seeing both of those things, but very minutely. I would say the most important piece of information that we got today was the latest reading on the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, which is the personal consumption expenditure, or the PCE. And that came in a very positive fashion. So we saw zero change on a month-over-month basis. On a year-over-year basis, we're down to 2.6. That's the lowest reading we've seen in about 3 years. So I think that tells us the Fed is likely going to start to feel more comfortable about cutting rates at their September meeting. They may well announce that at the or warm us up to that at the July meeting and maybe give us a prelude to that at Jackson Hole. But I think September is the time the Fed cuts. I think that that probably makes a great deal of sense. And the good news in the second quarter, we really saw an increase in disinflation. And that sort of stalled out in the first quarter, and it seems to be picking back up in the second quarter.
With potential rate cuts on the horizon, does that also sort of propel the trajectory of the market heading into the second half of this year?
It does indeed, but I would tell you, I think it propels some of the laggards. So interest rates coming down, we've seen a significant drawdown in the yields on the Treasury curve. So we peaked at 5% last October. We got as high as 4.75% in April, and now we're at 4.3%. So the trajectory of the yield curve is really important, and it's more important for a lot of the cyclical stocks. Think about energy and industrials and metals, et cetera. But certainly think about small caps, which have underperformed for several years now. If we have steady economic growth and falling interest rates, you'll likely see a rebound and some mean reversion in those small cap stocks.
We've also just seen an astronomical rise in the tech sector, like with AI implementation in the past year. So is that something that we're going to continue to see growth on? Can we expect it to plateau at any point? And does that then leave room for some of these other sectors to play catch up?
Yeah, I think the latter is really true. I think that the fact that technology and communication services are in large part about 10% of the 15% the S&P 500 is up this year to date, right? So that's pretty phenomenal. And all of the tech stocks that are at the top of the leaderboard have really fast growth rates in terms of both earnings and revenues. But that said, they're getting close to fair value, whereas the other 497 S&P 500 stocks are really undervalued and deserve a little bit of a catch up. I think we're going to see that broadening out of this market, especially with falling interest rates and certainly the ability to enter the second half and start looking for what hasn't worked yet. So we'd recommend taking a look at those sectors like financials, like healthcare, and certainly like energy to broaden out your exposure, because I think this market starts to find some sponsorship for some of those 497 stocks that haven't quite been leading this rally in the first half of this year.
We know that the PCE is sort of setting the stage for a positive move in the market, but what's the biggest threat to stocks right now?
Well, I would tell you this: if like in the first quarter, we saw a bit of stickiness, especially in the services inflation. If that reignites for some reason in the back half of this year, if we don't continue to see disinflation, which I suspect we will, if we look at the PCE report today, 34% of it was actually in deflationary territory. So not just disinflation, but actually deep, and that's mostly goods. When we think about that, if services continue to heat up, if we continue to travel as much and go to see Taylor Swift as much, that may well keep, that inflation picture sticky. And that means the Fed will have to stay higher for longer. And that's not priced into the market right now. That's not our expectation, but it's certainly a fear. So, I think it's the good news is our biggest fear is the economy remains too strong. And the stronger economy is going to drive some great earnings, but it's going to keep interest rates, at the Fed's current level of 5.25, 5.5, well into next year. I think that what's really going to happen is we're going to see a gradual decrease in inflation. The Fed gets more comfortable. They cut rates once in September, or perhaps again in December.
Thanks so much, Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial in New York. Up next, it's Entrepreneur Friday, taking a love for pizza and creating a recipe for success.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and Chicagoans are notoriously critical when it comes to their pizza, and it's a competitive market when it comes to attracting customers. We welcome today Robert Garvey, founder of Robert's Pizza and Dough Company, along Ogden Slip in Chicago's Streeterville neighborhood. Robert, so glad to have you with us. Love meeting entrepreneurs. Love it even more when they make something delicious. So let's talk about where your love of pizza came from and what brought you to Chicago.
Thanks, Rachel. It's great to be on. I came here, my wife's family's from Chicago, and we came to Chicago about 25, it's almost 30 years ago now. And my love of pizza, I grew up in New York City, and I had a slice a day habit back in New York. And when I got to Chicago, as much as I love Chicago pizza, it was not on every corner like I was used to. So I figured, I'll make it myself. It can't be that hard. Boy, was I wrong.
Okay, so what are some of the challenges? And also, tread lightly, because I don't want to get into a whole Chicago-New York pizza debate here.
No, well, our pizza really isn't a New York pizza. It's kind of a cross between, you know, somewhat of a New York and a classic Italian Neapolitan pizza. But I agree with you. I don't engage in those arguments either, because I love pizza no matter what form it's in.
A true pizza lover at heart. But you touched on opening up a business and some of the obstacles, the hurdles there. I'm curious sort of what you ran into in the last 5 years.
The last 5 years was an incredible challenge. First opening the restaurant was enough of a challenge. But then within 9 months, COVID hit us, and boy, was it challenging to say the least. But we were able to manage. You know, we have a great patio. The outdoor dining really helped us quite a bit. When we first opened up and before COVID started, we had a small delivery program. But once they shut everything down, we had to kind of shift hard and start really focusing on our delivery game. And in the long run, that really helped, because we have a great delivery and we have a great restaurant. So we were just very nimble.
Yeah, well, you've got a great product, too. I understand Robert's Pizza has gotten some national recognition.
Yes, we are honored to be in the top 10 of the top 50. It's called 50 Top Pizza. It's an Italian organization that ranks pizzas all around the world. And we are just so honored to be on that list for the fourth year in a row, in fact. So it's just incredibly exciting. And I'm honored and humbled at the same time.
So Robert, what sets your slices apart from others in the Chicagoland area? Because I know we don't have pizza on every corner, but we do have quite a few pizza places downtown.
We do. And that's, you know, that was one of my concerns when we first decided to open up a restaurant, is that the Chicago pizza market is very full. And we felt that we just had something a little bit different and that we would stand out. We do an artisan style pizza. It has a wild yeast sourdough starter, which I started 25 years ago and have kept alive somewhat miraculously, I think, you know, in my apartment. In addition to that, we do a 2 to 3 day cold ferment on our dough, and we just have this great chewy, crunchy crust with an artisan bread flavor. And it's just a lovely addition to the pizza environment in Chicago. And there are a lot of great pizzas here in the city.
But I also think that when you are trying to determine whether or not a pizza is good, it all comes down to the crust. So let's talk crust. What do you got going on? Crispy, doughy, thick.
It's crispy. It's chewy. It's on the thinner side, but it's not thin. It's got a beautiful cornicione, which is very structured and lovely. Just kind of a lovely chew and a great artisan bread flavor to it. A lot of my guests, at the end of their meal, will say, you know, I never eat the end of the pizza. But with our pizza, they constantly just they can't wait to get to it. They don't share it.
Well, that's a good brag. Thanks so much for joining us, Robert Garvey. Great to meet you. He's founder of Robert's Pizza and Dough Company. He's in Chicago's Streeterville neighborhood. And if, Robert, you want to send any pizza our way, I'll have our producer make sure you get our address. Still to come, a robot designed for kids. It communicates through AI.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There's a new generation of robots for kids, which features the power of artificial intelligence. So let's get to know one of them with the help of Ina Fried, chief technology correspondent for the news site Axios.com, based in San Francisco. Ina, this ain't the Tamagotchi and Furby I had as a kid. Tell us about Moxie.
So the big difference is what AI lets a toy robot do is carry on a conversation. Again, this is no more like 5 pre-programmed phrases. This robot is fully capable of talking about your day, hearing what you're interested in, having a conversation, and knowing things that it knows from having studied everything practically on the internet.
Okay. That sounds, I've got mixed feelings here. I'm processing what you're telling me, right? Because part of me, I have a child and I'm like, oh, this would be so great for language development, right? Being able to just have conversations, open-ended conversations. But then I'm thinking to myself, well, where are my parental rights coming in here, and how can I sort of keep an eye on things and does it get too out of hand?
So this was my mixed set of feelings, both going in and coming out of it. I will say, and my child's 11, everything that Moxie the robot said was exactly what I'd want as a parent. And I still found myself not super eager to leave the room and leave the two of them alone. just because of how what I know about how AI systems work.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they work 99 times out of 100, there's not a big guarantee of what's going to happen the next time. But they really, the creators really have done this very thoughtfully, and it's way better than letting your kid alone with ChatGPT or another internet chatbot. It is much more guarded, and there's a lot more guardrails in place, and the conversations are supportive and encouraging, and, you know, pretty much, I don't think parents from across the political spectrum would have a problem with what Moxie says.
Okay, but are we going to see mass adoption of this type of toy? I feel like people in general are wary of AI, just even on their own phones as adults. So you bring kids into this, and I think that there's even more concern.
For sure. And this is an $800 robot. This is not
Put that on the Christmas list. Santa can get that.
Yeah. At the same time, I will say it had some real value, I think, especially because it was pushing kids towards dealing with their emotions. It asks questions, it can play games, and I think it's not trying to take kids away from the real world. It is trying to help them deal better with it. So I appreciated a lot of what the creators of Moxie did. I do think we're going to see a lot more people try and slap AI onto a robot in ways that aren't nearly as thoughtful as this. And I think, you know, it's pretty dangerous when you think about the kind of misinformation that comes out of the broad chatbots like ChatGPT or mm-hmm. Google's Gemini, and then think, okay, let's put some wheels on that and then let's let it have interactions. Oof.
Right, right. Well, this seems like the start of a new wave of kids' toys. So thanks so much for the insight. Ina Fried, Chief Technology Correspondent for Axios.com.